If you haven't already, explore the many ways to connect with our show. Watch full uncut conversations on YouTube, gain AIA-approved continuing education credits through Arcademy, and make sure to check us out and follow us on social media at Detailed Podcast. This is an original podcast by RCAT. Try the number one most used website for finding building product information and save time and money. No registration is required with RCAT, so try it today and get ahead on your next project. Visit RCAT.com. That's ARCAT.com.
You can see direct down 110 meters direct wall you have down. So it's a very interesting part of the capsule. And then you can go up, and then there's a stair to go up. And the upper level is all a bed. It's a complete bed. Yeah, so the upper level is more for the night, to see the stars, it's a pretty intense experience with the stars, with the climates there.
This is Detailed, an original podcast by RCAT. I am your host, Charisse Lakeside, Senior Specification Writer at RDH Building Science and fondly known as the CSI Kraken. We will speak with professionals who share their insights into the most complex, interesting, and odd building conditions and the ingenuity it took to make it work. Join me as I pull back the curtain on the building industry and uncover the lessons learned. You'll gain valuable knowledge to help you better navigate your next project. My guest today is Ezequiel Ruete, alias Nardo, co-founder of Ovo Patagonia and co-founder of Perspectiva Aérea, or Aerial Perspective, the architectural firm that developed Ovo. Ezequiel Ruete is a creative developer and an aerial artist. His work bridges architecture, aerial performance, and embodied practices such as highline contact improvisation and breathwork, exploring the balance between gravity, space, and sensitivity. With a background rooted in entrepreneurship and innovation, he designs immersive experiences that invite people to connect with the heights and expand their imagination. The project we're talking about today is Ovo Patagonia in El Chaltén, Argentina. But before we get started, don't forget to take a look at the project photos and drawings as you listen along. You can click the link in our show notes or visit www.rcat.com/podcast. In the rugged terrain of El Chaltén, where Patagonia's winds sculpt rock faces and Mount Fitzroy dominates the horizon, Ovo Patagonia proposes an entirely new typology of lodging, one that treats the vertical cliff not as a barrier, but as architecture itself.
The important thing of this is that Ovo Patagonia is in a private land in El Chaltén, Patagonia. So in this private land, there is a big private land. There 6-7 years ago, Federico Echevarria, that is our client that today is our partner, but at the first was our client, he called us because he was the developer of Estancia Bonanza, that is the property name. So he was developing Estancia Bonanza, and he called us because he knew that we were working with an engineer team and that we were doing aerial stands and that we were doing aerial structures. So he called us and literally called me and say, hey, I know you're crazy and I know that you are crazy, but with ground. I know, crazy, but doing things that are actually signals. I mean, with engineers' signatures. So you are not so crazy, but you are crazy. And I have this wall, this big wall in this property, and I would like to put something there. So Actually, at the moment he called us, we had a common reference that is a Peruvian project that are capsules in a wall. And we knew, because we come from the background of the rigging, me and my partner, Luis, we were lots of years working on rigging concerts, big rigging stands. So we knew a person that also worked on the Peruvian systems. And we had actually our own design from before that Federico called us. So we were very, very agile because we already had a design and we sent a drawing about how, like a first idea that how, what would we do there.
Born from the imagination of Federico Echeverria and Perspectiva Iria's proclivity for heights, Federico evolved from client to partner in the journey of OVO Patagonia's venture.
So the story is very long because at the start, he started as a client of us, but the project was so complex to do and it had a lot of things to work that we became partners of him. So we became partners of the project to make him. So that's like the first story, how it started. It was a call from a client that became a friend and a partner also. Fede is like a really creative person. So it's like he has like a very beautiful mind. You know, he thinks different. And he wanted something in the property. So he was developing the property. He's actually continued developing the property. So he wanted something really different. And also the important thing is that the wall, it has a perfect or direct perfect view to the Mount El Chaltén. But it's actually like the iconic mountain of the zone. So it's like, he connected dots. He knew that he has a wall and he wanted to make a different experience there. And he knew that that wall was facing directly to the Fitzroy. So I think he first thought about the creativity and then we saw the business on it. But first of all, we all three, because actually we are three in the project. It's Federico that is like a main part of the project, and then Luis and me that we actually like made it happen. You know, we do it, but we do it with him because he was the first that opened his mind to see that there can be a habitability in a wall. So we were thinking it with Luis. We were designing them, but we didn't match with someone that say, hey, I have this wall. What can we do?
OVO Patagonia transforms a rock wall into a host structure. The four translucent capsules, anchored with climbing-based engineering techniques, extend from the cliff face like lightweight aerodynamic appendages. However, the first step in the project required studying the native ecosystem of the cliff face.
Actually, now we have four units, and we started with these first four units because that was the first macro area that we studied. So this project has different angles. When you started, actually, it's very weird. We started studying the condor areas. So we knew that, you know, condors are big birds that are living there. So the first step of the project was actually studying the condor areas because we wanted to include the pods and not make the condor areas move, you know? So we wanted to respect the condor areas that were actually condors around, also because we wanted to the final experience, the people be around condors. It's like, it is a double intention, but it's a good intention. It's like, how can we study this world because we are going to implant their things, but we want to respect the species around. So at the first we thought, I mean, that's in the territory thing, the first steps. Then we can go more in that way. And in the second, we thought about vertical circulation. That's the thing that it made this project. We think that is like a very differential part of the project. We thought about the vertical circulation and the three levels. We wanted to make a pod for two persons that had a bathroom and that had a chilling area. And actually, the thought of the design is to have three different, totally different areas to live. So actually, in the three levels, you live very different sensations. So if we do an horizontal level thing, you actually are always in the same level and with the same feelings. And here, we wanted to create three different feelings inside this one pod. So that was like the first start of the design. We wanted like a vertical circulation and three levels of experience, and also to respect the species of animals that were around. So that was like the first grounding of the project. Our master plan is four more and a suite, and a different type of suite that we are also inventing. But we are observing our travelers, making better the experience and taking our time to make, because this is a very special adventure night. So we are taking the time to make it better and better and better in the details, you know, like in the details of the experience. So, but yes, the idea is expanding also, because we've in all these years, we developed a new, like our own construction system in the world. So we want to test it and get it better. So yeah, the idea is to continue. And it is a one night experience. Many people think that this is a hotel. So we thought this as an experience where you can sleep. You know the difference. We have the services of a hotel, actually. Like, we have all the services as a hotel. But the design of this is an experience that you will never forget, where you can sleep. That's like an important thing that we want to get clear also, always, you know?
To pull off this massive feat of hospitality from above safely, a team of experts in geological analysis, mechanical engineering, welding, and mountain rigging systems assembled.
So the first thing I think that is always the team, the heads, the important heads that we work in important areas of the project. So we have the territory, so Fede, that is our partner, our client, first, our client and then our partner, he was watching the territory and giving all the details that we need about the wall. We went there many times, then we've been living there, but at the first. And then we made a small closed table with an architect, that is Luis, a mechanical engineer, that is Eduardo Aparicio, Emiliano Marcos, that it was our head rigger. Today is our manager. We had in our warehouse, in our workshop, we have our Mauro Aldereta, that is our welding master. So we started making a small group. We like to say that we are small, but thorough. You know, like we work very near our products, very near with small teams. And so then, each of them had their own directions to bring to the table. For example, the mechanical engineer team had a lot of, like, three or four more engineers back with working with them, doing the specific calculations of the winds and of the weldings and all of the structures. The rigging master, our rigging master, was working in all the protocols of the mountain, of how to work with the people in the rigging system, what type of systems we were going to use. He had, in some moments of the project, he had 25 people working for him. Our welding master, he had six or seven people working with him also in the welding properties and in all the structural things. Luis, with the architectural, had also two people drawing with him. So we were actually living the project. We were all the time working for it.
The pod's placement and orientation draw directly from the mountain's logic, such as exposure to prevailing winds, sun angles, and the natural curvature of the granite. Each capsule becomes a calibrated response to the site's forces rather than an imposed object requiring careful analysis of the cliff's face and the geological makeup.
With Luis, we were making the strong decisions, like the big decisions. What type of studies we had to do at the start? So we started doing geomechanical study. So once we studied the condor areas, we defined a macro zone in the wall. When we defined a macro zone in the wall, we started with a geomechanical study. It is a geologist specialized in geomechanics. So at the same time, we were working with a team in Buenos Aires doing the designs with the engineers. They calculated the type of weight it has, this project, these capsules should have. So at the start, we thought that we needed some lightweight structures so to be easy to move them through the wall. But no, we need a lot of weight structures because of the winds, because there's a lot of wind there. Actually, there's a lot. So we had to be all the time working in crossing information between the teams. And the studies, the geomechanical studies, were made for the solicitudes that the engineer teams made, but the engineer teams needed the design team to finish the pieces. So it was like a very funny organization. So we started studying the wall. We made the macro geomechanical study and then a micro geomechanical study. So first you study all the wall, and that means that we had to go to the wall and actually rappel all the wall and take rocks from the wall and go to the laboratory and break them and know what type of specifically rock and the crosses of the angle. It's a very specific thing. The geomechanical study is a very profound study. So then actually we went to the micro zones. So the zones where we actually wanted to put the pots. So we need to study all the zones. They're like 30 meters per 20 meters. It's like 50 meters per 80 meters area, where we were studying three different zones per four. So 12 zones there, where we were taking samples of the rocks. So that study, that was a long study, gave us the implantation zones. So when we had the implantation zones, we could start thinking, how can we get them up?
Equally important is the project's ambition for minimal environmental impact. This extends to the careful considerations taken to survey and measure the process of installation on the site.
Here we're with Luis. We had these strong decisions to make. It's like, what type of system are we going to use to put these pots up? So there's many problems you face in that type of decisions. First of all, we could make a road around the mountain, but it's like that would mean to take down a lot of trees. That would mean to have motors inside the woods, and we wanted the woods to stay clear because we wanted to, first of all, we wanted to do not damage the woods. And second, we didn't want it to have the woods with species displacements also. So we want it all to maintain. So an important decision that we made, that it was a very good decision, is one day that we thought, why won't we do it through the air? Why not? Because the thing is, the wall, it has a difference of 270 meters from a plane that is down there. So we had the background of rigging lines, of rigging in the mountains, many years. So when we want to rig a system to work on it, first of all, we think on how to cross a line from dot to dot. So we know when you want to put a line from a mountain to another, you have to start thinking about how can we cross the line in this gap. So actually, at that moment, we were already using drones for it. So we used a drone and a fishing line, you know, for the fishing. So we connected a 500 meter distance. So from the top of the mountain to down, we have 500 meters. So with a drone, literally, Luis up, me down, he fly the drone and we connected the two dots. So we made a system with a cable that fishing lane progressed to a 4 millimeter like a paracord. Then it progressed to a 11 millimeter rope. Then it progressed to a 6 millimeter steel cable. Then it progressed to a 13 millimeter steel cable. And we put that between two towers. So we didn't tore any tree. We only put four big bolts up and four big bolts down. We made a removable system where we could carry all our charges up and down and resolve all our logistic problems with a cable. So starting with a drone is crazy, you know? It's like a very soft way of starting this type of project. So we actually started with that. Also, the climate is very extreme there. It's extremely extreme. It's very harsh. So we had to do, we say, windows of working. We open a window, we do an objective, we close the window, everyone to sleep to their homes and get ready for the next window.
The project faced a lengthy provincial permitting process that demanded a thorough technical presentation of its engineering to the public office overseeing approvals.
At the first moment we started with the project, we couldn't sign the project because our engineer team wasn't from the same province of the installation. So we started working with an engineer, with a big engineer firm that worked on that province. So the engineer firm, it has like two hands, two important things. Is first of all, a second eye to all our documentations, and they are the ones that present the project to the province. So it's the architectural engineering office of the province. It's a public office, so you have to present that. So they presented that, so we have a third eye to it, that are the ones that actually say, okay, this is an okay project. So we have two filters, our small team that work in all the finite calculus and all the like precise calculations, that have to present our own engineer that has to sign that. So that goes to the office of the engineering signature of the province, and then all that documentation goes to the province in cross also with the ambiental studies. So we have that and the ambiental studies is from the scratch. From scratch, we were working with them. Oh yeah, it was a long process, like a 2-year like a 3-year process.
Materially, the capsules function as high-performance microenvironments. The exterior balances lightweight polycarbonate construction with robust anchoring systems capable of withstanding Patagonia's notoriously fierce winds.
We work with polycarbonate, plastics, 8-millimeter polycarbonates that assure us, because structurally the pot, it is from steel, from metal, yeah, steel, acero we call it in Spanish, steel, galvanized. It has like a back and a tube and two levels of structure. That's the structural part of the pot. It is like a back, like a straight back, and two different platforms that make the structure. All the big weight is there. And then we have what we call them ribs. They are like guts that they go down from all the structure in a curve. So that ribs, we connect them with the polycarbonates, and we made that the combination of the polycarbonate with the ribs and the steel structure made the structure very, very solid to the winds. So it was like we needed something that was the election of the polycarbonate was because we needed some curvature to make tension. We put that polycarbonates in tension. So it's a very, it's like, we would say that it's a tensor structure itself. Itself with the mountain is a tensor structure, but inside we would say that the structure comes from the big, from the structural wall and the two platforms, and then it gets tighter with the polycarbonates and with the ribs there. So also you have to think that down the structure we have all the weight of the structure comes to a point that is all the weight of the structure comes to an IPN. I don't know if you call them IPNs. It's a big steel that comes from the, we put it from the mountain out that receives.
I saw this. So like the, it's like a steel grate platform is probably what I'd call that.
Yeah, but it's not the part that is down is not a platform itself, but it's only a steel from this and from this wide. It's like 1 meter and a half wide and like this. That is a structural point that receives the weight. The cool thing is that, okay, there's now I'm mixing with the rigging system because all the structure all works with the rigging system because this wall of the capsule that gives like the front to the actual wall has four legs that the legs are going inside the wall, pulling the capsule down, pulling the capsule out of the wall. And at the same time, the capsule has two cables that bring the capsule inside the wall. And at the same time, it has three structural cables that tends the capsule up to the wall. So the capsule is like supported, but tensed to the wall, and also tensed up, and has these four legs. So, totally, we have 9 points of connection to the wall and the four legs.
Aside from the logical intensity of installing the pods, the team had to cooperate with windows of production when the weather allowed.
Our capsules, we were divided in 3. So each capsule, each ovo, is 6 meter up per 3 meters wide. So we decided to divide in 3 the capsules to put up each of the floors. So that means that we needed to put to go up with the first third of it. And to get it up to the mountain, these 500 meters up, and then disconnect it from the steel cable and progress the wall for 45, 50 meters for the first one. So it was like a big progression through the wall. And it was like the first piece was like a 360 kilograms. The second piece was like a 650 kilograms. And the third piece was like 350 kilograms also. So that progressions were a very, very extreme part of the labor, for sure. That was a big moment of it. And not only because the progressions are very specific and the movements of the pieces are very specific, but also because we didn't knew if that is it was possible or not. It was the first time. It was the first time in the world that we were doing this thing. So there were not experts to call. When we called experts, they say us, good luck. Yeah, very interesting moment. Also, because in the rigging moment, you have windows of climate. So perhaps you have one piece up in the mountain. And if it is bad weather coming, you have to put the other two pieces on that because it's not going to be good for the installation. So it was a very strategic moment and a very strong moment. Also, we put the first one from the design to the color, to the installation. You always have like differences, you know. So we needed to observe. We actually observed 1 year that structure. So, yeah, it was a very important movement. So the installation was one of the most beautiful parts of the project and the most stressful ones also.
The mounting system was designed specifically for this mountain's composite, with steel rods drilled 1 meter into the rock wall and high-tension anchor points capable of holding up to 35 tons.
I will give you our far point, but it's a very strong recommendation that we cannot use this as a common factor because we studied this wall specifically. So this is not a regular measurement. It is a very specific measurement of that specific zone of that wall. So we use in an average of 1 meter profound drill, a drilling of 1 meter inside, and 42 millimeters drill, something like this, a 37 millimeter wide steel rosquet bar with the chemic inside. So this four or five millimeters between the bar and the hole are full of the chemistry. So we had to bolt to make these big bolts, and then we used a machine. We were working with Hilti, that is the working guys. So they came and we made a pull test to them. So the pull test was 35 tons. We had the anchor points, 35 tons in extraction, and they didn't even move. So for 2 minutes, 35 tons in extraction. So that was the test of them. That's like the system, but I would say that if someone wants to do it, you have to really study the rock. That's the first thing you have to do. Like there's not a common regulation for that. You have to study it. And we made a way with steel stairs through the wall. So if you people check the Instagram of Patagonia, there's lots of images of the steel stairs. So you are actually walking to the wall, to your capsule. You never hang, you never rappel. No, you actually go walking to it. You go walking. It's we have customers of 75, 80 years last year to our capsules. So we, without a problem, like you can go walking to them, but you're going to be walking with 270 meters direct exposure. So it's a very strong walk, but you are totally secured with a cable, with a safe cable, and you are with a guide. So you are actually never alone in experience. When you're in the capsule, you are with the people, with the person that is with you in the capsule, in the OVO, but you are all the time knowing that you have your guide. And there's a pretty strong connection, emotional connection with our guides always. Like people get with our guides very, very good. It's a very good thing.
Each capsule unfolds across three minimalist levels: a bed perched on the upper floor beneath a dome of stars, a pared back lounge at mid-level, complete with a dry toilet, and at the bottom, a suspended net that invites guests to lean into the void and feel the mountain beneath them.
The entrance of the pod is in the middle area, is in the middle level. You will get inside and you will leave your back and everything hanging in the door. You will take out your helmet and your harness, because you will be with the harness and the helmet, and put it all in the door of the capsule. So there you have a small living room where you have a table that is a glass table, a small glass table, and two seats where you can sit. And the thing is that this middle level is a level where you would eat and you will have your first sights of it. So you will have these things to your binoculars, and you have a small door where you have a coffee machine, small refreshments, chocolates, teas and hot water, a lot of things. There we will explain you about the heating system we have. You have the light systems also. Then you can get inside the small bathroom area. We have a dry toilet there. Dry toilets are perfect for this type of situations, because we have like a dry toilet with a small water system of 15 liters, where you can brush your teeth and clean yourself. You are coming from upside, that is a shower. We have a shower, but it's not in the pot, but it's up. So we are already showered, and we are down. That's important, because you have 1 hour walk up, then you get the shower, and then you go down to the pot. So you already showered, and we have a dry toilet there that it has a type of organic bag that then we take it out and we compost it. And the dry toilet has like the thing that you pour to the toilet. It takes down the smells. So it's a very cool dry toilet. Then when you get to another zone of this small place, you can open like a door in the floor, and there's a stairs, and you can go down to the net. In the lower part of the capsule, we made a small net for chilling that is exposed to the direct height of the capsule. So it's a very interesting zone of the capsule. I like it very much, because we have like pillows, and it's like a chilling area, a net. If we net it with paracord, you can see direct down 110 meters direct wall you have. down. So it's a very interesting part of the capsule. And then you can go up, and then there's a stair to go up. And the upper level is all a bed. It's a complete bed. So yeah, so the upper level is more for the night, to see the stars, it's a pretty intense experience with the stars, with the climates there. So that's like the three spaces there we have.
With no active kitchen present, OVO Patagonia provides exceptional and unexpected hospitality at 800 feet in the air.
You have a room service there. We have a chef. We have a chef up the mountain that is living there. We have chefs, we have our guides, and you have room service literally. So we give you the food, but in the capsule you have your things to go through the night, like water, hot water, cold water, like a small fridge where you have like chocolates, some details. You have your coffee machine. Yeah, it's like the minimum things for you to be comfortable. But you know when you are there that you have a personal guide. So you can ask more tea, you have also wine. You have wine. I mean, you can. It is a moment to chill out and to enjoy the views, because we are there for the views and for the feeling of nature itself. You know, like there's strong winds going on there, so it depends the night that you have. It depends the winds that you will have. So we explain a lot of that. All our experience is based on what type of night you are getting on.
As if the design ambitions weren't bold enough, the site's isolation increased the challenge, demanding river crossings to reach it and restricting all on-site communication to radio.
We work this work without electricity, without phone coverage, without Wi-Fi. And we had to literally work with radios all the way. We didn't have communications to other parts. We were inside a mountain. So I think one of the things in these projects is communication always, because you need to flow. At some point of the project, we were 35, 40 people communicating in radios. So also to get inside the property, you have to cross a very big river. So each of our materials were crossing or through a bridge that is 1.20 meters wide and 130 meters long, or crossing the river actually when the river is low. So our workshop, we had two workshops. One workshop in Buenos Aires, we made all the pieces. Then we brought all the pieces to Chalten, and we have another workshop there. And the workshop was from one part of the river, or one side of the river, and the installation was in the other. So we actually had to connect watching the river. When the river was down, you had to have your piece okay to cross the river. So that's like the minimum things that I want to say to the people to know what's the context of this refinement of project. But actually, I would say that the more stressful part was the first connections of the three capsules. I mean, that was like the moment that all of us were waiting and we were watching if actually we could do it or not. So to see the three parts in the wall connecting, that was our main focus and the more defiant part of the project. Then we have a lot of the more of dependencies or problems in the project, because actually when you see the images of the project, you see what we show. But we also made 5 houses up in the mountain. We made bathrooms. We made all the conditions for our workers to live there of the project. So that was also a very stressful thing, to actually build a lot up in the mountain. But the most mystical moment of the project and the stressful moment was the connection of the first capsule, definitely.
Construction demanded a choreographed sequence of complex operations. Materials were moved individually onto platforms fixed to the rock wall, where rope access certified experts carried out all installations while working in open air.
We mount the steel and the polycarbonate structures were the structures that we get up. Every other part of the system, we had to make it when the capsule were done there. Yeah. Because the connections between the platforms, we had to be clear. We couldn't have the interiorism made. We would love to make it down, but our construction system couldn't allow it, because we need the platforms clear, because the platforms, like, they connect to each other. So you couldn't have the wood inside. We are reversed with wood. We couldn't have the wood inside there. So we needed actually to lift every material up and then go with every material down to the capsules.
That's crazy. Like, you said the whole top platform is a bed. Is that like a mattress? Like, you had to get a mattress down the side of the...
We had to get the mattress down the side of the mountain. And an important thing to say is that we didn't have the steel systems to walk into the capsules at that moment. We were walking all through the air. The mattress go inside through the air. The woods go inside through the air, through systems, through rope and textile systems. So we made different rope and textile systems to put that, inside.
Where do you find construction workers that can do that?
Oh, it was an interesting thing. It's a small niche there. We worked with very special people. There are some of them that they came from the worlds of the IRATA. IRATA is a certification of rope access. It's a rope access certification. So many of the people were working in the rope access certification, and there were many people that perhaps there weren't rope access certification guys, but they were making the study to make the rope access certification, because they were very good at welding, for example. So if we need some welding thing or some detail, we need some specific person of welding or someone, and he goes with IRATA to follow him. So there were many people working on the area. Yeah.
So did you have to get, I would assume all those people don't live in that area, did you have to get people from all over the world?
Yeah, from all over Argentina. There were people from other countries also. There were lots of people participating. There would be like 100 different persons that participate. The small teams were of 12, 13 in territory. Me and Luis had criteria, because we were working in ringing systems, so we knew what we are talking, but they were the people that put the hands and take the final decisions of where to, like, different things. But me and Luis, we were very, very, very near and living there. Actually, we were we were there all the time. Like we were not in a computer in Buenos Aires. We were living in Chaltén there with the people, living up the mountain with them and doing all the work with them. Yeah, it was a long process.
Seeing the pods finally in place and observing the client's awe was a deeply moving moment for Ezekiel and his team.
I think one of the most emotional moments of the project was when we were up with a small team inside the capsule, when we actually knew that that was totally possible and that we were inside that capsule. And we were with our welding master, Maurito, that is like the person that welded all the systems, and with our head rigging master and with our engineer. We were like 5-6 people inside the capsule, and we were like making a glass chin-chin, and we cried. It was like I think that was one important moment. And then when we finally finished all the systems, because there were lots of things to do after we put the 4 capsules. So we had to make all the houses up there, all the water systems. Our water systems we are taking water from a small cave that is 1 kilometer down the mountain. And we do see a drop, a constant, natural, beautiful water drop. And we take the water and we make a 1 kilometer pumping system through the woods. So it's like a very complex project. When we finished all that and we could take a shower up there and we were receiving clients, our first clients was a very big emotion for us also. Like when we actually knew that this experience was enjoyable for other persons, I think that's my favorite part. Like when I finish the project and I see that dream that we had actually is a thing that the people would not never forget. It's a very emotional place. There's a lot of our guests that cry, because actually it's very interesting when they see perhaps this in the internet and when they make the decision of booking it, because it's very important that it's all the time booked. There's many people in the world that is knowing. So it's very important to book with time, because there's the booking is very cool and it's very good, but it's like you have to be with eyes open to book. And when the people book in the computer because they see the images and they say, oh, this is great and this is beautiful, when they actually go to the property and they put the eyes to it, there's a big emotion there, because you see the high, you see the installation, and when you see it personally, it's extremely, like, they see it and they say, I would not go up there, it's too much. So when they follow the experience with the guide and they actually go to the wall and go through the wall and see all the view and go inside the capsule, that moment for them is really emotional. It's really emotional. And that's a very nice thing that we are seeing on all our guests. They are very happy with the decision of going there.
The project's success rested on the team's strong commitment to the design vision and their ability to maintain seamless communication throughout every stage.
First of all, the importance of straight communication is like being straight and being sincere with the communication with all the team is very important. And being flexible with the decision making without losing the view. It's very important to have we are very creative in our way of seeing things, but we know, and I know that me as an artist, I have to relay on the data of my engineering team, of my architectural team. So being flexible means to can integrate the strong information of the project and like to know how to adapt that to the vision of the project. Because I think that that was a very important thing, like to maintain the thorough vision of bringing something that doesn't exist to the world, and at the same time know how to be humble to listen to the people that is in your team. So that was my what I learned in all the time with them, like how to be a big listener and to be thorough in my questions to them and to know how to ask what to ask. But at the same time, knowing that I'm in this position and me, and in this case, me and Luis, we were in this position because we have a strong vision. So I think that this is a human thing. All the time, always. We are working with materials and we are working with nature and we are working with. So the important thing is also for me is like being a good listener also of the space we were working with. So that things, I think that were my strong learning things, and also maintain this, an example that people in the town of Chaltena, the first, they told us, you are crazy. You cannot do this. But it's like we listen to them and we take the steps with a lot of small steps. So it's like go small that you are going to go big. It's like being going small, listening everybody, knowing who to listen and who to not listen too much, knowing to have a criteria, putting limits, when you have to put limits, putting limits. So I know that I'm describing a direction position, but I think that I learned to be much more profound on that position in a way, and to be permanent on the vision.
What OVO ultimately offers is not simply a night above Patagonia, but an encounter with the elemental forces that shape the region. It positions architecture as mediator between human comfort and natural extremity, between exposure and refuge, between the immensity of Fitzroy and the intimacy of a translucent pod. In doing so, OVO Patagonia expands the language of hospitality architecture, embracing the vertical as a place to dwell, reflect, and experience the magnitude of the landscape in its purest form. Before we close out this episode, I always try to gain some additional insight from our guests about the greater industry. For Ezekiel, I was curious how important it is for design professionals to tap into their creative and artistic side to be better architects.
In my case, I was first open to that side of myself, and then I became a doer in the world of architecture. You know? But I feel that there's an experience in the sensation of the air or in the somatic experience, because I come from an artistic family and we dance a lot and we move a lot and we are movers and we enjoy the movement and the music and very small things. That perhaps I think that has the information to my body and to my mind to make decisions. I always say that I work, and me and Luis are working in memory. So we work in making things that people cannot forget. So I think that forgetting there, I need to leave things that I cannot forget. So treasuring the presence of life, treasuring, making my life being memorable in my own experience, I think is a way that I can introduce it to spaces and to architectural projects. Like that's why we get calls from lots of parts of the world to make these small talks and for these projects, because we see space in between things also. So I've been always, since I'm 20 or so, seeing between buildings because I wanted to walk between them. So I'm all the time, my sight is trained for that. So we are all the time watching the space in between and feeling what thing we want the people to feel inside there. So I think that's what informs me. Like, that's the sensitive area, you know, to work with. And with the people, I would say to leave things that are memorable to them if they want to work with the memory of people. It's the only way. It's like the only way of living it is working with your own memory first.
I really enjoyed this conversation with Ezekiel. I hope this episode sparks a new idea, helps you solve a problem that you've been working through, or inspires a mark that you want to leave on this world.
The thing that I hope is to inspire people to go inside and outside. It's like to inspire people to listen themselves and the people around, and to connect with themselves and with the people around to make their dreams, to actually make their dreams. I think that's a pretty nice thing. My own artistic work that I'm working at this moment is called Balance, Oxygen and Movement. It's a work. So I'm telling the people, my public, to come to a space, and we actually weave a space between all the public. We weave a space, and then we do a protocol of weaving with all the public. We weave the space, and then we elevate this space. It is inside a cube. So I work with geometry structures. So what I wanted to say here is that we are actually weaving our spaces all the time. We are actually, when we are talking, we are weaving. So we are weaving our spaces. And I hope that my work to the world will make people understand that now we are actually weaving, and that it is a power to weave. And the weaving is the conversation. The weaving is the listening of the other persons, the understanding of the difference. I would like to give that service to the people and to inspire them. But I don't know if I'm going to do it. I'm just trying.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and want to learn more, visit rcat.com/podcast to see photos, details, and more related project and product information that we discussed today. While you're there, take a look around rcat.com. For over 30 years, RCAT has been the resource for AEC professionals to find the right products for their project. Try RCAT and see how their tools can save you time and money and help you get ahead on your next project. Visit rcat.com. That's ARCAT.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can support us by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, and sharing this with your friends. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back to share more stories and lessons learned to help you navigate your next project.